Today's episode of Flags Fly Forever is brought to you by Pennant Wars, our presenting sponsor for the podcast. Pennant Wars is an online baseball management game where you call the shots as the GM of your own baseball franchise. Build a team that plays your brand of baseball, draft and develop amateurs, spend big in the free agent market, or make blockbuster trades with other owners. Pennant Wars' in-depth and realistic simulation engine plays out full 162-game seasons, pitch by pitch, over the course of just 6 weeks. Best of all, the Pennant Wars universe is always on, so you can check in and manage your team from anywhere, at home, on your phone, or even at work. There are only a few weeks left in the fantasy baseball season, so now is the perfect time to get started with Pennant Wars. Head over to PennantWars.com to try it out for free today. That's PennantWars.com. Try it for free today.
He was one of the most impressive players in both batting practice and in the game at the Futures game. He made that ridiculous catch, and he just absolutely tattooed one into orbit. And it's not like you're not supposed to stand out like that when you're 19 years old up against the best prospects in baseball, you know. He's already on the short list of guys right now who I'd be looking at as a potential top three overall fantasy prospect by this time next year. And I don't say that lightly with a dude that's, again, 19 years old coming out of low A.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I like to prove, we go down tonight.
Hello everybody, and welcome to episode 106 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined today by another very special guest. He's a writer at Baseball Prospectus on the fantasy team and also the prospect team. He's out in California. He's our favorite, Wilson Caraman. Wilson, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, man? How are you?
This is your first appearance on the podcast, on the program, correct?
I think that's right. I might have done one. I think this is the first one.
Well, we've been talking for years, but we haven't actually sat down at a legit prospect session on Flags Fly Forever. So this is exciting.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely, man. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So we're going to talk a little bit of Cal League a little bit later on. Wilson's our eyes and ears out in the Cal League. We're going to get to a lot of that. So this is going to be mostly a dynasty fantasy baseball focused show. We'll talk some rookies and some top 25 prospects and everything like that, but we're going to focus mostly on how to build your team, because I'm assuming if you're listening to this podcast right now, while the playoffs are going on, you're a pretty hardcore fantasy guy or gal. So they're in the, what, the 10th inning right now in this wild card
game? We're going to number 11, it looks like.
Turn it up to 11.
Playoff baseball, baby.
Well, I'm excited. This is a fun time of the year because everything's still kind of fresh and the minor leagues are wrapped up, and this is a good time. So I want to start off with just some general things as far as prospects go. Wilson, because you play in a ton of dynasty leagues, and I want to get your sort of general thoughts on when you're constructing your dynasty roster, what are the certain types of prospect profiles that are most appealing to you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely skew heavily towards hitters when I'm, you know, approaching a rebuild or just in general looking for prospects. And I think the most telling thing that I start with is the hit tool and approach at a young age. I mean, if we're talking about guys I'm looking at myself live, I want to see how they cover both sides of the plate, how they stand up to sequencing in different locations, that type of thing. You can project power with younger hitters a little bit based off their bodies and swing planes and, you know, where they're at
presently with regard to tapping into any power that they have in games. But hit tools are much more difficult to peg. They're kind of the hardest thing to project offensively as a scout. And if you give me the choice between a guy with strength who can hit now but isn't necessarily showing that much game power, and a guy who's hitting a bunch of homers at high A but he's struggling pretty badly with breaking balls, chasing balls off the plate, swinging through velocity in the zone, that kind of thing, I'll take the first guy 9 times out of 10. So in real terms, you're talking there about, like, I will gladly take Dan Vogelbach over a guy like Dylan Cousins or something like that. Most of the time, you know what I mean? I think more broadly, age and league context is just really, really important. It's a really fundamental thing to understand in dynasty leagues. There are some parks out there, Asheville and the Sally League, a bunch of the parks that I see on the regular out here in California, Reading in the Eastern League, plenty more that will positively distort offense. And there are plenty more in the Florida State League and elsewhere that will move the needle in exactly the opposite direction. And I think you have to have a handle on those effects in a dynasty league context. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be scouting stat lines and evaluating talent really inappropriately. And age considerations are similarly pretty huge there, you know, especially for young guys in advanced leagues. Baseball is really, really hard, you know, especially when you're at a universal mental and experiential deficit against all the other players you're playing against. And struggling isn't a bad thing for most prospects. So if you have a really young guy that's not exactly tearing the cover off the ball when he's 3 years young for the league, well, looking at his numbers and the production values isn't really going to help you judge him as a prospect. So, you know, listen to scouts, read reports on guys from people who have actually seen hitters and have seen players before, and tend to weigh those observations over getting stressed out that a dude on your team is hitting 230.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot to unpack there. That was a really great description, but, you know, you're saying it's easy to hit home runs in Reading. I'm shocked to hear that.
I've never... They certainly made a run this year. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's something else, but
I don't mean to crap too much on Dylan Cousins either. I mean, I saw him at the Futures game, and his batting practice session was awesome. He was tattooing long, majestic fly balls deep into the San Diego skyline. So he definitely has raw power.
Yeah,
but yeah, you put him in a launching pad on top of that, and you get a 40 home run season.
Yeah, you just have to understand the context in which that kind of happens. So,
yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
So you brought up something interesting about evaluating hitters against minor league pitching. And I think that's something that gets lost in the shuffle, is that some guys just are walking a ton against guys with no command. They're advanced for their level. So I think it's one thing when we're looking at scouting stat lines and we can see either impressive or terrible numbers. And I think it's hard to understand how we get to those sort of numbers now.
Yeah, no, and I don't want to throw out all minor league stats either, because they do help, you know, shape the edges of a scouting report and of a player profile. It's just not the primary thing you should be looking at. But yeah, I mean, as you know, like, oh, Frankie Liriano's throwing some smoke up there right now, boy. He's looked pretty like vintage Frankie so far. I have a long and storied love-hate relationship with him in dynasty leagues, as I'm sure everybody that's ever owned him for any stretch of time can claim the same thing.
I traded him twice in TDGX this year, so.
Yeah, that sounds about right. He's one of those guys you do that with.
I got out early, I think, on that. But yeah, there's something cool that we have at Baseball Prospectus now. We finally have league and park adjusted DRA and CFIP numbers for pitchers.
Which is wonderful, yeah.
It's a thing of beauty, because you can go back and look at, like, Noah Syndergaard had like a 1-point-something DRA in Las Vegas, which is
in his terrible Vegas season, yeah.
Yeah, his actual ERA was like 5-something, but his Vegas DRA was like crazy. So
yeah, that's another one of those parks that's just completely impossible to garner anything useful in evaluation.
Yeah, like watching, who was it? what's his name? Alex Reyes. Like, he would pitch in Colorado Springs and give up six runs, and I was like, that's not bad. I was like, that's okay.
Like, he is a dude, by the way. He is the real deal. I can watch that guy pitch all day.
Well, like, the Futures game, like, if you didn't watch that and you weren't impressed, like, you need to go rethink a lot of
that. It was so easy too. I was behind the plate for that. I've never seen a guy throw triple digits like that with just so much ease. There's nothing difficult about his delivery, and he's got the physicality where he's going to develop the command he needs to, and the raw stuff is just awesome.
Absolutely. So that's a reason you should subscribe to BP, so you can get access to those DRA numbers, because I think they reveal a lot and they add the context to those surface stats. I'm almost referring to ERA now as like a surface kind of stat. Like, I think DRA is far more interesting. I love looking at that and CFIP instead. But the Futures game, I just realized we haven't talked to you ever, so we haven't talked about the Futures game with you, but I got to get your take on Eloy Jimenez, because to me, he's the guy who's risen the most, I think, of any fantasy prospect.
I was going to talk about him in great detail later. Yeah, I mean,
let's do it now, because fantasy owners need to know about this dude.
Let's do it. Yeah, no, he's the guy. I would agree with you. I think more than any prospect this year, he's sort of taken that step into borderline elite status already. We've got a couple of scouting reports from multiple prospect team members on the site who saw him regularly in the Midwest League this year, and I mean, they're both borderline pornographic. He was one of the most impressive players in both batting practice and in the game at the Futures game. He made that ridiculous catch, and he just absolutely tattooed one into orbit. And it's not like, you're not supposed to stand out like that when you're 19 years old up against the best prospects in baseball, you know. He's already on the short list of guys right now who I'd be looking at as a potential top three overall fantasy prospect by this time next year. And I don't say that lightly, with a dude that's, again, 19 years old coming out of low A.
There just aren't many guys who start off with that type of raw power and athleticism. It's just rare. Like, I can't think of five guys who look like that.
No, I mean, the body is incredible for a kid his age, and he's already started to grow into his man strength at a young age, and so you can see the sort of developmental track of it a little bit easier than you otherwise would with a kid his age. And I mean, just the gains in approach and the hit tool consistency that developed over the course of the year, according to our guys that were watching him, is just really impressive for someone with that kind of skill set. Doesn't come along very often.
Yeah, good for the Cubs too. I mean, they haven't had a good young player in a long, long time. So
it's got to be so frustrating for their fan base to have to wade through the doldrums. But at least on the back end, maybe you end up with one guy like that, you know?
Something to look forward to a few years from now. Something in Chicago. To look forward to, yeah. Maybe maybe next year's the year. So you never know. You know what's great is here in Boston, everybody's talking about, well, what if it's a Red Sox-Cubs World Series? Because then it's Theo against his old – I mean,
yeah, sure.
The storylines are crazy. This postseason, like, the storylines are, in general, are crazy good. Like, there's so many. You got the Giants with the even year thing. Obviously, the Cubs, no matter what happens, it's insane. It's going to be fun. I'm excited.
Yeah, no, and this first game here is really kicking things off in proper style.
Yep, very exciting. So while we're on the subject,
Ubaldo Jimenez in extra innings.
Oh,
we've got a new Ubaldo sighting in like the 11th or 12th inning.
Yeah, I had to stream him. Quick aside, I had to stream him one day in like July against the Angels, and I just remember him.
Ball been there, man.
Oh my God, he just got pounded. Like, he just kept giving up hit after hit, and they left him out there to dry. He gave up like 12 hits in four innings. It was nuts.
Yeah, but you know, and then he'll like turn around and he'll have that like seven inning two hit thing, and you're just like, come on, man.
Yeah,
come on.
No, it's crazy. So sort of my general prospect questions that I kind of led off with, we got through one of them before we went on the Eloy Jimenez side track.
Yeah.
Which
well, he counts too.
Yeah, you have to do that. But when you're scouting lower-level prospects like Eloy Jimenez, what are some of the things that you're looking for specifically when you talk about skill sets? Because I think fantasy owners are always looking for that next. Obviously, whenever we have a chat on BP, everyone wants to know who the next guy is.
It is like insane how many questions you end up with in the queue that are like, who's the next awesome prospect? Best prospect in baseball in 2022. It's like, I don't know, man. Some 15-year-old in Venezuela. I don't know.
just say Juan Soto and everyone will be happy. Everyone can
Exactly. No, I mean, I think we touched on this a little bit earlier and talking about prioritizing hit tool over power necessarily with hitters. And then also with speed guys, you know, I kind of want to see if they have at the low minors level just that sort of natural ability to read and time pitchers and really kind of put that speed to use functionally on the bases, or whether it's going to be something that they're going to have to learn how to do later and hope they end up getting there with stolen base efficiency. But with hitters especially, you know, and pitchers too, I mean, I think broadly when I'm watching a guy, I'm looking very primarily at their physicality and kind of how they control their body and whether they have an understanding of the type of player that they are and should be developing into. And I think all those things sort of go into projecting consistency things like the hit tool or like command with pitchers. You want those guys that move well in their own skin and sort of control their bodies in fluid, repeatable ways.
You want people who look like Julio Urias is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, I would take him over a lot of guys. He's a really fun player. Yeah.
Yeah. You brought up something interesting talking about guys with speed profiles. I think I learned my lesson. I'm out on guys who have elite speed but questionable hit tools.
I think that's totally fair.
I'm just not doing it anymore because speed is just – I think Rob Maines had a good piece about this, that just managers in general, organizations, they aren't letting guys steal anymore. It's just not smart baseball.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of – that's another one where it's like, you know, you sort of need to have a sense of that as the course of a season unfolds, what managers and what organizations tend to value aggressiveness on the bases more than others. Because, yeah, I mean, you could have a dude like a Ben Revere or something end up in a situation like, I don't know, Baltimore where – nobody steals a base anywhere, and like, what good is he there? Oh no!
Oh, there Ubaldo. Ubaldo. Ubaldo happens.
Edwin's rocking the parrot around the bases right now. 3-run walk off. There you go.
That's awesome. Playoff baseball, October. There's only one October.
There's only one October.
I'll never forget that commercial as long as I live. I think about that commercial maybe once a week. It's
there you go.
It's forever ingrained.
Oh, easy Tulo. Easy Tulo.
Oh, God.
He just came flying into the post-game celebration scrum.
Just nobody get hurt. That's all.
Don't destroy your leg.
But getting back on track with the
speed. Yeah, sorry.
No, obviously the walk-off's crazy. It's awesome. But I'm more interested in guys who have that great hit tool, but then can also steal a few bases. Like, I'm not looking at valuing the speed over the hit tool is basically what I'm
saying. Yeah, like a guy that I saw this year that's
like Trey Turner to me is like,
yeah, sure.
Hit tool, but he also can run.
Yeah, and on base tool just as important for those speed guys. But like a guy that I saw a bunch of this year that kind of fits into this conversation is Wes Rogers in the Colorado organization. I mean, he looks like an Olympic sprinter, and he's one of these dudes that, you know, you see him leave the batter's box and he's kind of got like a high effort churn for the first couple steps, and then all of a sudden he's at first base. He just has elite speed once he's underway. And he's an okay hitter. He's not a bad hitter, but, you know, he takes pitches and he'll get himself into counts, but he has no power at all. And when he gets up the ladder a little bit and pitchers start attacking him on the hands with a little more precision, you know, I'm not convinced that hit tool holds up. And if it doesn't, what are you left with? A fast dude. That's it. With no power whatsoever. And investing in a guy like that in a league shy of 300 prospects or whatever is probably not the best use of your roster's resources.
Nope. So let's focus on the Cal League, because we teased it a little bit earlier, and I think this is something interesting. If you go to Baseball Prospectus, Wilson has two columns up there. By the time you're listening to this, his Cal League wrap on pitchers will be up, but hitters is already out right now, and that's where I kind of want to start things off. So just really quickly, just describe the Cal League and the context in which all this is happening, and then some of the guys that you were most impressed by this year that fantasy owners should be putting on their radar.
Yeah, I mean, I think just in general, it's such a difficult league to get a handle on true power projection, especially for the younger guys. Because, I mean, in addition to the standard physical and hit tool projection adjustments you have to make anytime you're assessing any prospect's power, you know, on top of that, you have the sheer production increases that you're going to see from guys, particularly in Lancaster and High Desert and Bakersfield. I mean, you have guys like Jason Martin in the Astros organization. He's a really solid fourth outfield prospect that I like a good amount in real life. He hit 23 home runs this year with fringe average power. And on the other hand, and this is a key one too, it's really easy to buy into your own power spike, especially for young hitters that come into this league. You know, you've got a bunch of high octane parks. You're going to see a lot of fastballs, and it's easy to lose your approach at a time in your career when you should be working fundamentally on developing it. You know, I talked about this a lot last year around this time with AJ Reed, and one of the main reasons that I bought into him as much as I did at the time, and I still do, is that he made these unusually impressive adjustments while at Lancaster to develop as a hitter. You know, he was fighting off pitchers' pitches to left field. He was looking to drive the ball to the left center field gap instead of trying to jack everything to the right side. And that growth oftentimes flies in the face of what you see happen with guys in this environment. And it's like totally natural when you think about it. You know, you're a 20-year-old kid or whatever that's never been a big power threat, and all of a sudden you start hitting balls that are flying out of parks left and right. The obvious, you know, human temptation there is to start trying to do it a little more often, see how much you can develop power-wise. And I think that's a very dangerous trap that can really deflate guys' development of an approach over the course of a long season spent, you know, in this kind of environment. So trying to get a handle and a read on the true power levels, I think, is the biggest challenge that we face out here. And that cuts both ways for pitchers too. We have a lot of high altitude, high desert places where breaking balls don't break quite as much, and fastballs that you leave over the middle, you might give up a fly ball to medium depth right center that carries over the wall for a 3-run homer, you know? So trying to figure out. Yeah, totally. No, if you're in Lancaster or somewhere where it's like 2,500 feet up and sustained 30-mile-an-hour winds out to right field every single night, like, that happens on the regular. So you learn plenty about pitchers' mental ability to overcome that stuff and stay focused on executing a game plan when they give up a can of corn for a home run. But you don't necessarily see how their stuff is really going to shake out in real terms on a night-to-night basis either. But so for guys that I saw come through the league that are fantasy relevant, I'd say Chris Shaw in the Giants organization is probably the best power prospect that came through. He's a guy I go back to the Cape League with a couple years ago, and from what I saw then to what I see now, his development's been pretty linear, which is a good thing for him. He's a solid hitter. He's got a decent plan at the plate, and he's got the raw strength to do damage when he gets you wherever the ballpark is, wherever he happens to be hitting. And that's good, because if he ends up calling San Francisco his home, he's going to need every ounce of that strength.
Yeah.
Slowing balls out. But he's a solid hitter with good raw power that should play pretty well. Johan Mieses is the guy that led the league in homers this year, and he's a guy I had pegged as my pick to be a breakout prospect this year in a preseason 10-pack way back when. And he did break out kinda. He made very legitimate strides this year in refining his setup and his swing mechanics. He got a lot shorter to the ball, and he's got those, you know, naturally explosive wrists and arms that you really kind of can't teach to get into the zone fast. He makes a lot of hard contact to the pole side, but that's only when he makes it. He's got a really, really tough time identifying and laying off of right-handed spin. I think he's going to grow up to destroy left-handed pitching, and I kind of like him in that Chris Young lefty mashing fourth outfielder role, but I'm not convinced he ever quite hits righties enough to become a real fantasy stud outside of AL or NL only leagues or pretty deep mixed leagues, especially daily ones.
One guy for me who I like, because you mentioned earlier, you know, scouting hit tools, but Luis Urias of the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. He was
Carson Cistulli fringe five guy, by the way. I don't know how fringy he is, but, you know.
Well, he was the best bat-to-ball guy in the league all year, pretty clearly. And that's despite being one of the youngest players in the league all year, too. He can just hit. There was some approach and strength growth there, too. It's definitely not the most sexy fantasy profile. It's a hit-dominant guy without a ton of power or speed. But if there's a potential, like, future DJ LeMahieu type in the league this year, it's probably him.
Those guys should make it, though. The guys who can flat out just...
That's what we're getting back to what we were talking about earlier. Like, that's what you want to see. You want to see that natural hitting ability. And he was 19 for most of the season this year. I think he ended up winning the Cal League batting title. I don't quote me on that, but he was certainly up there. He had 320 something, and it was a consistent 320 something. You know, he was never in particularly long, prolonged slumps or anything, and that's a really impressive thing. In late season looks, he was starting to turn on the ball a little more. I still don't think he ever really develops that much power, but there's probably below average 40 grade power in there, and he'll shoot the gaps a ton. And in points leagues, especially where doubles count, I think he's going to be a decent fantasy prospect.
Got another guy I really like who you saw this year who made it all the way to the majors was Andrew Toles.
Yeah,
go tell us about him, because I like him in fantasy, but you go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was really excited about him in April. I wrote up a really glowing scouting report that's up on BP, and I took every opportunity I could this year to write up Andrew Toles for fantasy value columns. I think I wrote two or three of them that you can find on off of his player page. I mean, he burst through the big league walls like that Kool-Aid dude. He's just a good hitter, man. And what was so remarkable about him, too, is he was coming off a year and a half of layoff from competitive pitching. And you could see the tools were all still very much intact when he was taking the field in early April. And he was already squaring good velocity from guys and taking it to left center and hitting balls that had some carry in parts of the zone that you don't usually see guys square balls up like that. I think he can be a really solid fantasy option for deeper and even medium depth leagues as soon as next year, but that's if he gets into a situation where he can get the at-bats on the regular to do it. I'm not entirely convinced that's in LA. I'm sort of curious to see how it shakes out. But he's a guy that's got sneaky power and a whole bunch of hit tool, and he's really fast and he reads pitchers really well. He's got great instincts in the field. I like him a lot as a player.
Yeah, I'm looking up his splits right now, and he had, I think he hit 326 against righties. I think this is something that Brett Sayer, our colleagues, has written about a lot at BP, and something we've kind of touched on in the past, but in sort of shallower mixed leagues, this is the perfect guy you can get for like a dollar at the end of your draft and use as a platoon guy if you can play matchups daily.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love a guy like this because I think no matter what, he's a perfect platoon type of guy who will be getting those at-bats. And that's that has some value. And he'll be on the strong side of a platoon too. So Him and Urias,
I'm glad you brought them up, because I absolutely had them as two of the better pure hitters in the league that I saw this year.
Cool. Any other hitters that fantasy owners might want to keep their eye on?
If you're looking for like a deep league sleeper, I think Edwin. Yeah, exactly. Edwin Rios is my guy. He's a big dude. He's one of those kind of fluid but slow guys. He sort of reminds me of Ronald Guzman with his physicality. he's got the kind of like just pure extension and leverage and strength to his swing that not many people have. He's a super aggressive dude in the box. He swings at everything, and there's a bunch of length to get into the zone, so he's going to strike out a ton. But he absolutely destroyed the ball in the Cal League, and then it held up pretty well in Double A too. So if you're looking for like an under the radar type that could develop into a Mark Trumbo kind of guy down the line that mashes but doesn't have a great hit tool and then has one random out of the woods year where he hits 40 dingers, he's my guy. I don't think he gets there, but
there's nothing sexier than a 306 on base percentage with
exactly. As long as you're in a standard league where the OBP is not gonna kill you. I really enjoyed watching him hit. He was a lot of fun. He hit one of the most majestic home runs I've ever seen live this year. Otherwise, Yusniel Diaz, I'm writing up a feature on him right now that'll be up in the next week or two at BP. He might, at the end of the day, be the top fantasy prospect in the Cal this year. It took me a while to get there. He did a lot of developing over the course of the year, and that's a good thing. He's a quintessential case in point of like, don't scout stat lines for young guys in May or whatever and freak out about them. He had a lot to adjust to. It was his first year stateside. He was super young for the Cal League. You know, he's coming from Cuba where he's just punching at any fastball he sees, whether it's over the plate or not. And he did a ton of growing this year. He's got a good, solid across-the-board fantasy profile. Management is really big on his makeup and the strides that he made this year. There was a lot of demonstrated growth there that's really exciting to see out of a 19-year-old. I like his skill set as something akin to, like, I don't know, peak era Denard Span with a little more pop and a little less OBP. Let's call it that.
Real quickly, Grant Holmes, what are your impressions of him? I know you saw him a bunch.
Yeah, I mean, this was a kind of a down year for high-end fantasy pitchers. There were a lot of really nice relievers in the Cal League, but not so many guys that I'd be looking at as like a Julio Urias or somebody like that to emerge as a potential fantasy ace. Holmes was probably the best arm I did get to see this year. He was the only guy I put a 60 OFP on in my Cal League review. And I only did that after revising it up in the wake of some demonstrated growth midseason. I caught him a couple times in April when he was okay. And then in June, he looked like he had done a little bit of growing with his changeup and with his command and addressing some of the weak points in his delivery. He can be an SP3 in a medium depth league if everything breaks right. He's got a great fastball curveball combo. It was probably the best 1-2 punch I saw in a starting role. And he made pretty significant strides in honing the change into at least a workable third pitch. Some guys that I didn't see in Texas, man, they had a really fun set of rotation guys come through, and they had like a whole bunch of guys in the rotation early in the season, and they just didn't line up for me. But Yoander Mendez ended up making an MLB cameo in September. He was in the league briefly in April, and I missed both of his.
That's a Craig Goldstein guy.
Yeah. We have him in the league that we have a team together, and he's great. Like, he's not going to be a fantasy ace, but he's a good pitcher with a good sense of how to pitch. He's a dude that I would be willing to bet even more strongly than Holmes develops into a quality SP3 type that can pitch for a long time in a fantasy and big league rotation. Ariel Jurado is another one in the Texas organization that, you know, again, kind of better in real life than in fantasy. He's not a huge strikeout guy, but he was a lot of fun to watch. Really young kid with an advanced ability to manipulate pitches and work two different fastballs and a good changeup. You know, in deeper leagues, he's a guy worth taking a flyer on, as is Brett Martin, who's another guy that was in that rotation and threw just a gem of a postseason start for High Desert when they were making their run to the title. Took a no-hitter into the seventh or something and struck out a dozen guys in his only postseason start. All three of those guys will probably be in our Rangers top 10 if I had to guess in later this offseason. And all three of them are worthwhile owns in dynasty leagues where more than 100 prospects are owned.
All right, so three guys before we dive into the sort of futures game and top 25 guys. But there are three guys who I know you've covered or talked about, who are, I've talked with you about. First is Jarrell Cotton. I think you've seen him a lot, correct? And because
I saw him
Dodgers.
A couple times. Yeah, he was with the Dodgers in the Cal last year, and I caught him a couple times.
More than I've seen him in person, though.
I am a sucker for any short dude that can throw a wiffle ball changeup like him. I will always root for that profile.
So he's in Oakland now.
Yeah.
I think there's something there. Like, this is a guy who I think even if you're in a shallow mixed league, he should be on your late in the draft. This is, or you know, a couple bucks at the end of the draft. That's a guy I want to go get. I think he could be really good.
I streamed him a couple times in various playoff runs this year. He's exactly the kind of kid that can come up and do a little damage before the league catches up with him with scouting reports and with tape and the like. Anytime you can throw that kind of a Bugs Bunny changeup and hit mid-90s with a fastball, it's a recipe for immediate success. I wasn't necessarily surprised by that. He struggled a good bit to spin the ball when I saw him. I can't speak to whether that's improved enough that he's going to be a regular option in a mixed league yet, but it's a great context. It's a good ballpark to gloss over some of his weaknesses with the long ball. He likes to work the fastball up and down, and he will get into trouble leaving fat fastballs belt high over the middle occasionally and having them hit long ways. But Oakland is certainly a ballpark that can help mitigate that a little. And he's absolutely somebody that I'd be looking at, you know, as an end game. Sure, what the hell, let's see if he sticks kind of pick next year. Yeah,
Raimel Tapia, it's working. we had this conversation about 2 years ago, I feel like, where we said, I don't know, I think you said it, or we kind of agreed on it, I don't know if this approach where this ultra aggressive, he just seems to be up there trying to hack at everything, is gonna work. And I think he scaled it back a little bit, but he's still very, very aggressive. It's kind of working. The dude hit 300.
Before have I taken more crap from people for putting a plus hit tool on a guy. Like, I wrote this scouting report of him last year, and yeah, I still maintain that he's a much better fantasy prospect than real life prospect. Right. The rest of his game was extremely raw, and it didn't show much sign at all of improving between the beginning of the year and the middle of the year when I saw him last in 2015. But he's a great hitter. He's got special bat to ball ability. The only reason I had a 6 instead of a 7 on it was because I had approach concerns about how it would bear out at the highest level with pitchers using his aggressiveness against him. And I'm still not, you know, convinced that I was wrong there. Saying a guy is going to be a plus hitter in the major leagues is not something that I take at all lightly. I think as a contextual hitter in cores and with his ability to just flat out hit, his power numbers are going to spike a little bit from that context to give him a little bit of extra fantasy value. There's enough speed that in standard formats where caught stealings don't matter, he'll be backing up the batting average with steals. He can turn into a potential monster if everything breaks right in fantasy leagues. Still question the real life value. I think he's a left fielder and not a particularly good one. I think he's going to get thrown out on a lot of his stolen base attempts. But I'd be perfectly happy with him as a dynasty asset, even in shallower leagues this year.
I believe in the hit tool. There's no reason to doubt it at this point. He's just done too much for too long. You can't even, it's almost like supernatural what he's able to do. So
and with that wacky two strike approach too, I've never never seen a hitter do what he does and still be able to manipulate the barrel with precision. I mean it's a really impressive bat to ball ability that you just don't see very often.
I can't even think of a comp for him as either a player or statistically what his profile is.
I got nothing, man.
He's just a freak. I mean, I say that in the nicest way possible. I don't know what to make of him, but the dream scenario is that he somehow gets into the leadoff spot and just has this monster season. That's in course. That would be the dream. So, yeah, we'll see. Finally, Dan Vogelbach. I've taken a lot of flack for liking the guy, but a lot of my love for him is based on statistics, because at BP we spend a lot of time and energy coming up with these metrics like true average, and by true average, he's arguably the best hitter in minor league baseball.
This gets again back to what we were talking about earlier, and especially if you're in an OBP league, he's just a dude you want to own. He's a very good hitter first, which is something again that I prioritize in all young prospects, and he's got oodles of natural strength and loft too, to where especially after he gets comfortable settling into his approach at the big league level, he's gonna hit home runs too. We started to see him tap into his raw power this year at AAA, and I think he was getting knocked a little bit aside from the lack of positional value for not necessarily manifesting raw power yet in his ascent up the minor league ranks. And I think a lot of that talk missed the boat. He's a very good hitter with natural strength that will end up playing. I've always bought that profile. I still buy it long-term. I will throw out a side note disclaimer that you can totally feel free to ignore me about him. I am extremely biased. I grabbed him in my home league's midseason draft in 2011 in his draft year when we were only rostering like 100 prospects. It was a huge overdraft, but I'm such a sucker for fat guys that can rake. And it was, it was the hella aggressive thing. He's been lingering for literally a half decade now on my minor league roster, which we've since expanded dramatically, incidentally. And I've got multiple side bets on him active at this very moment on his future value and contract status in our league. So I'm not at all impartial in my love for him. And I think it's warranted. I will go out on a limb for it.
No, absolutely. What I like about Vogelbach, too, is that I think there's really generally a lot of pessimism about him. You're going to have people like yourself or me who believe, like, just ardently believe in him blindly. But I think there's a lot of general fantasy owners who aren't interested in him at all. And they'll just write him off completely. So I think he's a nice guy to target from that respect, because I don't think everyone's going to be in on him. You're not going to have to give up a ton if you don't own him and he's owned in your league. I don't think you'd have to pay an arm and a leg to go get him. So,
no, I think that's right, and especially now that he's going to call Safeco his home. You know, Safeco has this reputation as being such an incredible pitcher's ballpark, but if you look at the splits, which you can do on baseballprospectus.com, the park factors by handedness, it actually has played as a sneaky okay home run park for left-handed hitters for the last couple seasons too.
Do you want to know what I had just written down on my sheet before you started talking there? Safeco left-handed power.
Yeah, see, you know.
Yep. It's not a death sentence like everyone thinks.
No, it's not. That's another thing that works to your point of the undervalued nature. You hear automatically Safeco, oh no, and it's not that bad. Whether the Mariners are cursed in their development of power hitting prospects is another question entirely, I guess. But it's a new regime now. Yeah, exactly.
All right, see, we're on the same page. It's not good. We have hive mind going on right now. This is bad. Bad news. We're talking with Wilson Caraman. We're talking prospects because this is the time of the year we do that in the off season. So the Jays just walked it off. This has been a fun night. So I want to get some general top 25 guys, prospects on the rise, because I think this is what people love. They love talking about this stuff. So who's the prospect this year? We talked about Eloy Jimenez a little while ago, but Who's a guy for you that you think jumped up into that top 25 sort of range that wasn't?
He's the guy that I was going to talk about. Can we just talk about him some more?
We can. I mean, I won't rule that out. But like for me, it's like Ihsan Diaz, somebody like that.
Yeah, he's another one on my list. I know Mauricio. Yeah, he loves that kid, and he wrote a very good feature piece on projecting his hit and power tools. Anytime you can find a middle infielder that's a no doubt middle infielder that has that kind of power potential, he's a guy that you want to be targeting in a lot of leagues. Travis DeMeritt's an interesting guy along those lines too, because he was like second in the league in the Cal League in home runs before he got traded to Atlanta.
Still striking out 300 times.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not entirely sure I buy his hit tool stacking up at all. But, you know, as a middle infielder with power, he's somebody that should be on the radar. I think along those lines, too, Willie Calhoun did a lot to sort of assert himself as a legitimate prospect by just continuing to mash double-A pitching at a very young age after mashing across like two or three levels last year. His power is almost all to the pull side. He's got a huge swing for a little dude. He's only like 5'8 or 5'9 or something. But he's got great bat speed, and he can just launch balls that he catches. I think he's going to be able to hit no matter where he goes. I don't necessarily buy that he stays at second base. I was very skeptical last year. I haven't heard reports that indicate that he's made a ton of progress this year, though he does have a noted work ethic and has bought into trying to improve at second. But he very well could end up in the outfield, and it doesn't really matter if he does. I think he's going to hit no matter where he goes. I know that, you know, Ronald Acuna is going to be a guy that that gets a lot of love this offseason. Yeah, I mean, he's just a very, very impressive real-life prospect, and fantasy one the same. David Lee wrote a great report on him recently, and I'm a guy that has Acuna in a couple of leagues. I wasn't even aware that his raw power was as impressive as it is. David Lee, who is one of the best scouts that we have at BP, he does tremendous work covering the Braves and low A ball, but he put a 7 on the raw power. And again, Acuna's not a big dude, you know. He's not a guy that you look at and think to yourself, holy cow, this is a guy that's going to hit 30 home runs in the big leagues. But the bat speed and the quickness and strength into the zone is something that really stands out about him.
Yeah, I think that was the quote he had, was he's never seen a guy with that type of size generate that type of power. It just doesn't happen. That's basically what his quote was, I think. And
yeah, which, you know, I anytime you hear somebody say something like that, especially if they're really good at scouting players like David is, you should absolutely listen to it. And I think Soto in the Washington organization is another guy that's a low A bat that's going to get a whole bunch of press this offseason. I already wrote about him once, and I'm sure it's not the last time he'll appear on the pages of BP as a target for deeper leagues.
I doubt it. What do you stand on Victor Robles? Because I've been in for a long time. His nickname to me is the Beast, because
he's a top five prospect.
He's so damn good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that it's kind of unfair that Washington has him and Soto. I buy it. It's an incredibly well-rounded, awesome skill set. Him and Moncada are probably 1 and 2 for me at this point. Brendan Rodgers is in that conversation too. Benintendi, I think finished under 130 at bats. He should still qualify. He'll be another top five guy next year. Robles is the real deal.
Yeah, their outfield could be Turner and Harper in the corners, and then Victor in center in a couple of years. Yeah. That would be disgusting. Not bad. That's okay. Nope. That's fine. It's passable. Yeah, I've been in on him for a while, and he's apparently really good. Actually, it was funny because people were talking about, oh, he struggled in Potomac. I was like, he's like 19 in high A or something.
Yeah, exactly. Come on. That's a the case in point.
What do you like, want? He hit like 280.
Yeah, no, it's not a bad scene at all. Austin Meadows is another guy who's a probably a top 25 guy at this point. He had a huge first half at AA.
I think Brett had him in the top 15 in mid.
Yeah, I buy it. His beginning of the season at AA was gigantic. He got promoted to AAA and he struggled a bit in the second half. It's a nice profile that's going to be especially valuable in points leagues or ones that count extra base hits at the beginning of his career, because he's one where a bunch of the doubles and triples should eventually turn into homers at maturity, but in the meantime, he's going to hit a lot of doubles and triples. And he's, you know, it's one of those deals where in a standard league, he's a guy that may eventually have a little bit of a post-hype window to acquire him, because he's probably not going to hit the ground running with massive power displays, but it's in there. And it's something that he should grow into with time.
Real quickly, two futures game guys. Yoan Moncada, now is the time. If you're ever going to buy him in the next decade, this is the time. Like right now, these next six months, right?
Good luck. Well, yeah.
I mean, all things considered.
Yeah, exactly. You hope that his less than earth-shattering debut marginally deflates his value, but I mean, you're not going to be fooling anyone with that. He's seasoned, no doubt, probable top prospect overall for dynasty leagues. His body is like unlike anything I've ever seen out of a minor league baseball player. It's silly. He is absolutely jacked. He looks like a really good like cornerback or running back or something. You know, he's just got that kind of like muscularity through and through, and he just controls his body with such precision that you have no problem projecting his tools to play down the line.
Did he homer from both sides of the plate in the Futures game, or I can't remember
now? He hit one right-handed on a hanging changeup that he stayed back on and just absolutely crushed to left field. It was this hard line drive that was just kept on rising and rising and cleared the fence.
Off the Western Metal Supply building.
Yeah, it was a very impressive home run, and it was a go-ahead shot in like the seventh or eighth inning. Yeah, too.
My dude Anthony Banda hung like five pitches.
Yeah. No, Banda's interesting. I saw him in the Cal League last year, and his stuff has ticked up notably, or at least it had what I saw in the Cal League. He was hitting 94, 95, and he was more like 89 to 91 in the Cal last year.
He was fascinating to me. Like, I think it was June or July. I read something that, like, he talked to Randy Johnson, and then all of a sudden he threw like 30 scoreless innings in a row or something. And I was like,
yeah.
This is interesting. And then he just wasn't that great the rest of the year, so I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm curious to see what becomes with him. I saw probably his worst start of the year last year in the Cal. He just didn't have it from the jump, so he was a little tougher of an evaluation for me. But I liked what I saw in the Futures game, but he didn't pitch all that great.
He also has the Urias and Cody Reed style glasses, which is
the goggles. Yeah,
him and Shipley. I'm gonna make an all goggle team. All goggle rotation.
Goggled all star.
Yes, the bespectacled all stars.
There you go.
we might not have a great ERA, but you know.
But you'll look fine doing it.
Yeah, style points is really all that matters.
Exactly. If you play in a league that has goggles as a category.
Exactly. All right, so I'll wrap up here, and we're starting a new segment. We did it last time with Alex Chamberlain, the first installment. So this will be five questions with Wilson Karaman.
Oh man! All right.
First question: favorite obscure prospect in the game today that's not named Dan Vogelbach.
Oh, come on. You can't take Vogelbach away from me, man. I mean, can it just be like a totally unrelated to fantasy guy?
Yes,
like
it could be anyone.
Weird reliever or something?
Yeah, it could be Joe.
I'll leave him to you. Yeah, no. I'm gonna jump on the Colby Blueberg train one more time. Colby Blueberg, he was the closer for Lake Elsinore for most of the year. He was a guy, he's this short, small right-hander that has this bizarre delivery where he kind of like, he's all closed off and he sets his front leg early on his, at the bottom of his drive and kind of pole vaults over it and like comes from this really weird arm angle from the right side that I don't know that I've ever seen on another pitcher, or at least he did in the first half of the season. And he was like untouchable. Nobody could figure this kid out at all. And then when I saw him late in the season, it looked like they were trying to like streamline his delivery and make it more traditional, and his stuff was all flat and he got knocked around and he had no command. So I'm hoping that experiment went so badly that they're just going to let him go back to throwing the way that he was throwing, and he's going to be a dominant, random, weird reliever that's going to make it to the major leagues.
All right, my favorite random weird reliever is Robbie Scott. I don't know if you've seen him a lot. I saw him in person a bunch in Pawtucket, and he limited lefties to like a, I think it was like a 105 average or something crazy, or a 105 OBP. He throws from two different arm slots. To righties,
I love that.
Yeah, to righties, he's a left-hand pitcher, so to righties, he's like more over the top. And then to lefties, he drops it down and comes from like this weird sidearm kind of delivery. And it's crazy weird. I love what he does though, and apparently it works. He didn't make the postseason roster, so
the Astros have a guy like that. Well, he was with the A's when I saw him last year, and then they traded him to Houston. Brendan McCurry.
Yes,
and he was my guy last year.
Yeah,
exactly. And he was like untouched at Oklahoma State. He was untouched in like his first two seasons of pro ball, and he throws from two or even three separate arm angles, and he throws like three or four pitches too. So if you add it all up with the different angles and the pitches he throws, there's like eight or nine different looks that he can give you, and so, he just was one step ahead of everybody when I saw him.
So this is like the Carter Capps theory, but like at some point, if a guy's doing this from like a weird, obscure sort of way, like as a reliever, at some point, don't you have to start to buy into it and believe that he could do it at the major league level? Because I'm surprised more teams aren't taking shots on guys like this just to see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Astros are kind of notorious for that, and like they always grab. No, go ahead.
Like if you're the Twins, like what do you have to lose?
Yeah, no, exactly. See if it sticks, right? Like see if it can play. Well, I mean, those guys aren't like that common, right? It's still difficult to get hitters out, you know, on the regular, even at double A or triple A, if you don't have some semblance of stuff behind it. And McCurry, you know, had pretty good stuff. He was throwing 90, 91, and he had an ability to spin the ball. The Astros, I was going to say, always seem to find like an undrafted sidewinder or two every year. They love guys that throw from low arm angles on the right side. And they had a guy this year, Jacob Doris, who I think I wrote about on site at one point this summer. It's Doris, D-O-R-R-I-S, if you want to check his player page. But he was like a real low right-handed arm slot. He was totally undrafted. And he can hit like high 80s from that low slot. And then he's got two different sliders or curveballs or whatever, like frisbee spinners from down low. One of them was like 75 and one of them was like 68.
The
Ben
Rowan special.
Yeah, no, it was great. And he was just doing disgusting things to right-handed hitters. And I wrote him up in the Cal League wrap for pitchers too. Like I think he has a legitimate chance to be a situational right-on-right guy if the command holds. And so far, so good. He dominated double A at the end of the year after a promotion too.
Yeah, I want that to be my job description. Obscure reliever finder guy.
Oh, I love it. I nothing makes me happier than sorting through reliever profiles in the minor league.
that's the best. All right, that was a long first question. Second question. Best fantasy trade you've ever made?
Oh, man. I traded Chris Davis before he was Chris Davis, like when he had just come off of that first little flash in the pan debut with the Rangers and hit a bunch of home runs and hit 340 or whatever over a small sample in his rookie year. I traded him, I think straight up or maybe with some like random throw in for Justin Upton when Upton was like just emerging as a top prospect. He hadn't made it. Maybe he had made his debut as a 20-year-old, but hadn't done much or whatever. But I traded him, and I've had him for his entire career and will finally lose him to free agency next year in my home league. So I got, you know, however many seasons Justin Upton has been a major league regular, very solid contributor, the entire span of that for Chris Davis, who got cut by this kid after the next season when he was hot garbage at the beginning of his career. I've always liked that trade. That set the course for my franchise for a long time. And then last year, I picked up Alex Bregman and Carlos Carrasco in a trade that was centered around Alex Cobb and Rafael Devers, I think, were the principals there, and a draft pick. So I'll take that most days, too.
That's not bad. My favorite was I traded for Yu Darvish, and I can't remember who I gave up now, but I know they were terrible. I just
the uncertainty factor.
No, they were so bad. I can't remember who it was.
That's a good situation.
I think it was like, no, I can't remember now. I'm gonna have to look it up. I can't remember. I just know they tanked completely. That's how bad it was. It was another good pitcher, but they just completely fell off the map, and Darvish was.
That's
like,
you know, that always makes you look a little bit better, right? As if you trade away a pitcher and. It's just like, you know, it's a crapshoot. Maybe he blows out his elbow a couple weeks later. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who the hell it was. This is going to bug me. I might have to look it up. Hang on.
You can put in a little epilogue to the podcast.
And by the way, the pitcher was.
By the way.
All right, question number three. How should fantasy owners be reacting to the home run surge in across baseball, because
I have no idea.
Regression? Like what the hell do we do?
Well, it'd be helpful if we got like a straight answer on whether the ball is juiced or not, right? Like,
and whether it's going to stay juiced.
Yeah, and whether it's going to stay, like, that's a really difficult thing to kind of grapple with for planning purposes, right? Like, is this a 1-year spike, and we're going to see the commissioner's office step in and be like, that was a little much, boys. Let's trade it in next year. Or is this like a new normal? I don't know that we can answer that yet. I think just from a practical standpoint, it's probably wise to try to be grabbing some sluggers right now to keep pace.
Nice. I figured it out. It was Matt Moore after he had that insane 2012. And I traded up for Darvish. There it is.
Yeah, that'll do.
That was nice. Not many good trades after that, though.
Yeah.
A lot of bad ones.
Oh yeah. Craig and I joined a league together, like a long established dynasty league last year. And our first trade, we traded for Mike Trout. We traded Buxton, Tulo, and Waka for Trout, which I thought was pretty good. I mean, Buxton is probably going to turn into a stud at some point, but we got a year of Mike Trout for nothing that was really going to help us all that much this year. Tulo was okay, but obviously wasn't.
Might hurt you eventually.
Yeah, but we got Mike Trout, so.
he's good, I hear. It's scary how good Mike Trout is. Do you ever, like, stop and think about it?
No, I mean, you run out of superlatives for a guy like that. What he's doing right now is unprecedented. It's amazing. I can't wait to see what the next 15 years look like of his career and how long he's able to perform at this level.
Somebody wrote it on BP. They were like, there's literally no historical comp for this.
There isn't.
Pecota doesn't know what to do.
The amount of war that he's racked up at such a young age is absurd. I don't know how it's even a question as to who's the best player in baseball right now.
All right, let's get through the rest of these. Question four, your worst prospect call ever. Someone that you believed in or didn't believe in that really came back to prove you wrong.
Man, I was real. We were talking about Justin Smoke earlier. I was really into Justin Smoke as an OBP guy. Travis Snyder is another one. I was so into Travis Snyder. I was so into him. I thought he was going to be a superstar. I have no idea, man. I've never figured out why he didn't blossom into a good hitter. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. He was a dude I played in two or three leagues at the time where he was like kind of coming up as a big prospect, and I had him in all of them. I was all in, and he just never really did it, man.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I'll go with Travis Snyder.
Yep. Finally, Kyle Schwarber or Gary Sanchez redraft next year.
Man.
Third, probably the third catcher off the board behind Posey Lucre.
Yeah, I mean, both of them will go probably right after one another, because whoever snaps up one, somebody's going to be like, oh, I better get the other one really quickly. I don't know. I'm taking a pass. I'm taking a pass and drafting Wilson Ramos in the 13th round.
Is Wilson... Hang on. Wilson Ramos, like, is he going to play again? What's the deal? Like,
I don't know. How bad is his knee?
He kind of was like, I might not catch again. And I was like, oh, that's great.
Well, he'll have catcher eligibility next year. That's all that matters. It's fine.
True. we'll see what happens. All right. So that's it. We're done. That's our show. Wilson, awesome. you've been great. Thanks for coming on. Really,
thanks for having me, man.
We're going to do a quick wrap up here. Thanks for listening to episode 106 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Perspectives Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a 1-year premium membership. You should do that today. We're going to be doing some fun stuff coming up with our subscription services. So lots of cool stuff coming your way there. You should subscribe today. You can read all of our scouting reports, like Wilson's and the rest of the BP scouting team. The prospect team, those guys do a fantastic job. The coverage is unparalleled. There's nobody else giving you this type of content anywhere. So sign up today and you get access to that. If you do the super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal, where Wilson will answer your questions at 3 a.m. about your 70 man team. Which high school prospect should I draft? He'll get to all of that with you. Usually in about 12 hours or less. Finally, you can follow us on Twitter. Wilson, give us your Twitter handle, because I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm at Vocal Javelins.
I didn't want to say it incorrectly, so.
That's a Public Enemy lyric, so there you go.
There, exactly. And I am at George Bissell. I would appreciate it if you would follow me, because it makes me happy when I have followers, so.
Good pitch. Good pitch.
That's really all I can offer you. I'm not sure what
I will second that, sure.
Have you figured out what your Twitter style is? Because I haven't figured out mine. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing on there, frankly.
Mine is occasional. you know, I go through mild bursts of enthusiasm where I'll try to, like, really make an effort, but... I don't know. I stay home with two kids during the day. I don't,
You don't need Twitter to feel good about your life, is what you're saying.
No, definitely not. And I don't know. It's a lot of work to try to build your hashtag brand that I'm just not willing to put in.
Right. See, like, Craig is just grumpy and comments on everything and has semi-good takes from time to time, like once or twice a year.
Don't give him too much credit, man.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, that's like, you gotta give him some credit. I mean, he's verified and all, you know.
which is a great process.
I don't know who he paid off for that, but...
I'm glad it happened quickly, so we don't have to look at his mug anymore and he's gone back to the Calvin and Hobbes avatar.
Alright, that's been enough. This has been fun. Wilson, thanks once again. This is good. We should do this more often.
Sure, man. Anytime. Good to talk to you.